Welcome to Just a Minute. Hello there, Sue Perkins here, and as the minute waltz fades away, what a joy it is to welcome you to Just a Minute. Time now to introduce you to the four incredibly talented people who are playing Just a Minute this week. They are Julian Clary, Patterson Joseph, Paul Merton and Rachel Paris. Please whoop and cheer for all four. I'm going to ask them all to speak on a subject that I give them for 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or deviating. So wishing you the very best of luck. And we begin with you, Julian. The subject is my Spanish exchange. I really can't wait for this one. Okay, can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or deviating on my Spanish exchange, starting now?
I met my Spanish exchange at the coach station and he said, my name's Juan. I said, that's funny, I'm one too. Anyway, we had a charming week and I really increased my vocabulary and I learned some Spanish as well. He still writes to me every Christmas, signing Love, Jay. You see what I did there? And I visit him, lives in Torremolinos most years, now married, funnily enough, to some Spanish woman called Jose Arta. And what?
I think that's a deviation from any Spanish name.
Jose Arta.
Jose Arta.
Jose Arta.
How are we spelling that, Julian?
H, no, J-O. I don't normally have to provide the spelling of words.
Sorry, I'm being pedantic.
Yeah, you need a lot of corroborating evidence with Patterson. He wants to...
Jose Arta, okay.
Anything else?
No, that was it. I thought that was a deviation from Spanish.
I think it probably was a deviation from Spanish. And being quite a new player of the game, I'm very happy to give you the benefit of the doubt. If Jose Arta with an H is listening, please get in touch and I'll make sure that I make it right, read the points with Julian. That means you get to tell us about my Spanish exchange, Patterson, in 23 seconds, starting now.
My Spanish exchange happened when I was about 14 years old. A Spanish teacher came to our school and introduced us to disque bleu and gouloir. And for those who are really healthy, these are cigarettes.
Paul.
But they're French cigarettes.
Mm. Yes,
I suppose a Spaniard could smoke French cigarettes, yes.
Yes, he can. And he was very continental.
Right.
He literally was continental.
Well, he was. And we were very impressed with him. So it was amazing that he brought those incredible cigarettes that we'd never seen.
I consider the scene set. I want to hear more. You've got 8 seconds on my Spanish exchange, starting now.
So he would take us round the back of the school to where the bike sheds were. And there he would distribute to every single boy who wanted it.
Move from my Spanish exchange to a dealer. So, you're speaking as the whistle went means you get the point, Patterson, and you also get the next subject. That's all yours, and it is What a Rip-Off. What can you tell us on What a Rip-Off in 60 seconds, starting now?
What a rip-off it all is, don't you think, people? It's a rip-off. Everything was sold. Everything were given. It's a rip-off. We should...
Julian...
Repetition of everything.
There were a lot of everything going on.
Good. I had nothing. I was empty.
49 seconds, Julian. What a rip-off. The subject is yours, starting now.
In the early 90s, I used to appear on stage as a glamorous policeman with a fairy truncheon. Then, when I tired of that, with some Velcro down the side, I would whip it off and the audience would shout, what a rip-off, because underneath was bright yellow lycra. It was camp comedy. That's what the public wanted at the time. What a rip-off is something you might also hear if you're at the bar and you order a baby sham and they say, that'll be 19 quid. What a rip-off, you'd say. And you'd be right, because I think the prices these days are extortionate. You could buy a whole crate for the...
Paul.
Hesitation.
Yes, indeed. There was a stoppage. Julian, I seem to remember you've used that voice already this series. It's a familiar gentleman to you.
Don't know what you mean.
If you closed your eyes, you'd swear he was in the room with you.
9 seconds remaining, Paul. Oh, no, what a rip-off, and your time starts now.
I remember the gigs that Julian's talking about there with great affection. It was a rip-off when people looked at the price of the ticket and saw the entertainment that was being provided for them on the stage. They were absolutely...
Paul, you're speaking as the whistle went means...
You wrote that as well, didn't you?
Did I?
The Policeman Act.
Oh, yes.
So you know what you're talking about.
I do, yeah.
Paul, not only did you finish that subject, but you get the next subject, mm-hmm. which is When I Was at Crufts. What can you tell us about When I Was at Crufts in 60 seconds, starting now?
Well, one year I entered a Cocker Spaniel and I was asked to leave the premises. One of the reasons why Crufts is very popular... You can use that one later, Julian. I can see you making notes. The reasons why Crufts is very popular is because people can bring along their dogs and they can show them to other individuals and say, look at this magnificent hound, see the tip of his nose is beautifully wet, his tail is so wonderfully groomed, and others will say, yes, you have a magnificent animal here in front of...
Julian.
Magnificent was repeated.
There's a double magnificent indeed. When I was at Crufts, what can you tell us about that in 30 seconds starting now?
When I was at Crufts, I won best in breed for rough-haired homosexual, and I got the rosette to prove it. When I was at Crufts, the main thing that worried me, though, was the smell of poo. People don't realise when you're watching it on the television, that and all those big boned women with bad teeth wandering around. I don't like the look of them. If I was running that premises, I would make a few changes and hygiene would be top of my list and dentistry would be...
Julian, speaking as the whistle went, gets the point and also the absolute lifelong affection of all big-boned women everywhere. Rachel, we are over to you now. Now, your subject is, that's so Bridgerton. That's so Bridgerton. What can you tell us? That's so Bridgerton. In 60 seconds, starting now.
People associate Bridgerton these days with a Netflix show which is set in the Regency period, aping Jane Austen novels, but featuring a great deal more sexual activity, often in places that you would not expect or which would be comfortable in real life, such as on a rockery, on a police...
Paul.
Well, sort of hesitation.
Yes, it was a little bit of hesitation, but went very beautifully until then. 37 seconds remaining for you, Paul. That's so Bridgerton, starting now.
I remember I was in Bridgerton once, watching them filming, and I thought to myself, that is so Bridgerton. As the actors came out of their dressing rooms and the director pointed at the cameras and said to the assembled cast, you must now feel this performance. It has to reach out of the TV screen and grab the audience by the neck.
Patterson.
A deviation from the reality of a film set. You're basically thrown a script and told to get on with the action.
Also, does an audience want to be grabbed by the neck?
Maybe they do.
Well, they maybe do. Do you know what? Seeing as Patterson is a very new player of the game, I think I'd like to hear from somebody on the inside, actually, perhaps, Paul.
Yes.
What it's like, what it's really like.
Yes.
That's so Bridgerton. Tell us about it in 18 seconds, Patterson, starting now.
I would look at a woman with her bustle just tight and her boobs just poking.
This is Radio 4!
Oh, sorry. Her décolletage.
I think you're mixing up with Radio 4!
Her décolletage. Sorry, I misspoke.
It was so Bridgerton. Rachel, you challenged.
He said bustle, and actually, in that period of time, it would have been an Empire line.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
Yeah. There we are.
Do you know, that was one of the most beautiful challenges I've ever had the pleasure of adjudicating. You're absolutely correct. It would have been an Empire line in period. So back to you now to tell us... That's so Bridgerton, starting now.
That's so Bridgerton is the response I gave to my best friend when I first saw her wedding dress, which was indeed an Empire line in a beautiful ivory colour stretching to the ground.
Exemplary. Speaking as the whistle went, Rachel gets the point. And that's the end of our first round. Let's have a look at some scores very briefly. In second place, we've got Rachel. And in joint first place, we have Julian, Patterson and Paul. All to play for. Right, round two is on us. And Julian, we're back with you. The subject is shoulder pads. What can you tell us about shoulder pads without hesitating, repeating or deviating? Your time starts now.
Shoulder pads were very popular in the 80s. Started out quite modest, but as the decade progressed, larger they became. I'm thinking of Dame Joan Collins, who epitomised the expertise in that particular garment. She would swish into a room, knocking people down left and right with the aforementioned shoulder pads. I wore them myself on stage, obviously, in one of my entertainments, which I performed around the country, and I was called the fan club of that actress. You see how this is all tying together. Shoulder pads were what we had in common, plus an awful lot of makeup and other...
Paul? Well, it was a hesitation.
It was a little hesitation. And normally I'd say, no, I'll let it go, but Julian is an incredibly experienced player, so, yep, OK, I'm going to give you that one, which means you've got 12 seconds to tell us about shoulder pads, Paul. And I'm looking forward to this.
Yes, so am I.
Yeah. It's time to let that secret out. The time starts now.
When I think of shoulder pads, I think of the great film actress Joan...
Oh. Julian.
Think was repeated.
Yes, it was. Yeah. Absolutely, yeah.
Well, it's back with you, Julian. You have now 9 seconds, starting now.
Shoulder pads have never really gone away, not used quite so often with such flamboyance, but occasionally when I look through women's magazines,
Well done, Julian. You spoke as the whistle went, so you get the extra point. And Patterson, you get the next subject, which is someone of national treasure status. Paddington Bear. Oh, that's warm to the audience. 60 seconds of your best, please, starting now.
My Paddington Bear story goes like this. I was hired to play the dapper young hatter in the first Paddington movie. There I was in a wonderful costume, acting with great performers and a tennis ball on a stick. Later, I snuck into the cinema about 7 months later to see the movie.
Rachel.
I'm sorry, I want to hear the end, but you did say movie twice.
Yeah, I did.
You did say movie twice.
And we'll never know what happened.
Oh, no.
No. Well, we probably will, because I'm going to give Rachel the point, because it's absolutely correct. But I'm going to hear exactly what happened, so it's back with you. Because I've lent in now, and I wish the anecdote to be fully completed. Your time starts now.
It doesn't end well. As I snuck into the cinema...
Rachel, you challenged.
Yeah, hesitation.
It was hesitation indeed. You get it back.
I'll tell you in the green room, don't you worry.
Yeah. So, Paddington Bear, Rachel, and you've got 31 seconds starting now.
Paddington Bear and the Adventures Thereof is one of the finest cartoons for children that is available on television. All of the voice actors are very good, and it's much better than the other things that are available, such as Paul.
Do we have two available? Available and available?
Ooh.
No?
Yeah,
no.
You did, yeah.
Yes, says one woman very vociferously. She sounds like the sort of woman that is not to be trifled with. Yes, correct challenge, Paul. That means you get the subject. 16 seconds remaining on Paddington Bear, starting now.
Certainly the Paddington Bear movie that's number two in the series is a magnificent comedy and should be recognised as such. The British, when it comes to comedies, they are very good.
Rachel.
Sorry, repetition of comedy?
Comedy and comedies.
Comedy.
Oh,
he snuck in this. He snuck in a last-minute pluralisation, the little sneak. So, incorrect challenge. 6 seconds on Paddington Bear. Paul, your time starts now.
Michael Horden narrated the series when it was way back in the 1970s, and he did a magnificent job. Everybody...
Well done, Paul. You were speaking as the whistle went, and not only do you get the point, but you get the next subject. Don't you dare ask me that. 60 seconds on that subject. Don't you dare ask me that. And your time starts now.
When I was a teenager, I was very shy, and people, relatives, used to say to me, "Are you courting?" And this is the sort of thing that used to crease me up in embarrassment. My face would turn red at the age of 15, 16, and I hated hearing that particular query being put to me. "Are you doing this or that?" And I thought to myself, "Do you know what? I'm just too bashful."
Rachel.
Hesitation?
Yes. Which means you get "don't you dare ask me that" with 33 seconds on the clock, starting now.
When you're a little child, people ask you very stupid questions as if you're an idiot, even though you're just six. I used to bite my nails and suck my thumb when I was that age, and they would say, "Oh, do they taste of strawberries? Or is that what you're having for dinner?" And I would look at them like the imbeciles they were. And I would say, "Don't you dare ask me that." I was rather pushy for a six-year-old.
Paul.
Well, it was a hesitation.
It was.
Yes. It was a bit of a hesitation, but you went marvellously up to that point. So at least just 4 seconds on the clock.
Oh. Paul.
Sneaky, don't you dare ask me that, starting now.
I was trying to get into a nightclub in the West End and a man came up to me and he said, "Do you know what you do?" And I said, "Don't you dare ask me that."
Paul, you're speaking as the whistle went, and you get that point. Rachel, we are with you now. The subject is my first driving test. Without hesitating, repeating or deviating, all of which are important also in a driving test. 60 seconds starting now.
My first driving test, I sincerely hope, will be in the next 2 years, because I have been trying to learn how to do that activity for some time now, and things keep getting in the way, such as COVID, norovirus, a heart attack of my instructor, a car not being available at the very last minute, so I keep booking those appointments, and one after another, occurrences keep stopping me from prevailing. I do know how to drive, more or less. I won't say safely, but I give it a good go. I believe I can keep on the road, certainly in London, which is really testing it, actually. I haven't tried the regional places yet. Perhaps I would be better advised to take my driving test in Birmingham or even the Welsh borders, where I've been given to understand that it is easier to do so. Never learning to drive for.
Who needs that? It took me four goes. Absolutely dreadful. I just don't let it stop me, though. Keep on going, I say. Right, that's the end of that round. Rachel did the complete minute, which was a beautiful thing to behold, so gets an extra point. And let's see how that's affected standings. So, Patterson is in fourth, and then we've got Julian. In second place, we've got Rachel. And just nudging 1 point ahead, Mr. Paul Merton. We begin round three with you, Julian, and your subject is Adele. Adele. Can you speak for 60 seconds without hesitating, repeating or deviating on the subject of Adele, starting now?
I arrived at the arena in Las Vegas to watch Adele, and the man on the door said, "Oh, it's you again. That's a new for a while." Well, what are the chances of that? But her performance was second to none, and her hair, she'd been busy with the tongs, our Adele, and makeup was, I mean, I'm no stranger to that cosmetic myself, but she doesn't spare herself, does she? But it's the voice that we go to enjoy. And I said on the way out to my friend, "Wasn't she marvellous?" "She does that every night. Can you believe it?" Anyway, I've more or less run out of things to say about Adele.
Patterson.
He just admitted he deviated.
Yes. I think when it comes to that, yes, it's, we can see that as a hesitation or a giving up, really. So I'll give you that, yes, as a correct challenge. So you've got 21 seconds on the subject of Adele, starting now.
Adele burst onto the scene a few years ago with an album called 18.
Julian.
It's called 19.
It was delayed by a year.
That was a slam dunk, really.
It was.
So I'm going to give
bang to rights. Bang
it
to rights.
Goes back with 14 seconds remaining to you, Julian's time starts now.
She's got this thing of naming each album after her age at the time of release. Well, what a wheeze. That could go on for her entire career. Every now and then she goes dormant. She's living life, as she puts it, having babies, getting
Julian was speaking as the whistle went, gets the point. And Patterson, we're with you next. Let's see what we've got. We've got That's a Red Flag. That's your subject. What can you tell us about That's a Red Flag? Starting now.
The phrase That's a Red Flag was invented by the first person to walk in front of a motor car with a big red flag. Every time they saw a red flag, the drivers would brake as hard as they could. They were only going 12 miles an hour, but to them, it was breakneck speed. One day, the flag was missing, and this poor man had a green flag. The green flag...
Paul.
Repetition of greens.
Yes.
Indeed, repetition. 36 seconds, Paul. It's yours. And the subject is That's a Red Flag, starting now.
Well, I believe the arrangement was when motor cars were first invented that a man had to walk in front of the vehicle waving a red flag to wave pedestrians and horse riders that there was a strange new invention coming down the road. Now, when we think of a red flag, there are so many colours that it could be. It could be green, blue... Oh...
Julian.
Could be.
It could be indeed. 17 seconds, correct challenge, Julian. It's now with you. That's a red flag, starting now.
A man was showing me into his boudoir once and he said, I'll just get the handcuffs.
Oh, I bet I know how he talks.
No, it's a different man.
Really?
Just you wait.
Yeah. I'm looking forward to seeing Julian's dazzling range of accents on display. I'm going to look forward to it. So...
The man of a thousand voice.
All right, so we've got 14 seconds on That's a Red Flag. We're in your boudoir. Take it away.
Next to the bed was a Giles Brandreth book. Well, that's a red flag, if ever there was. Excuse me, do you mind calling me a taxi? He said, oh, no, I thought we were going to have the hanky-panky. It was a different man. He was...
Julian was speaking as the whistle went. The surprise with which you said it, that was a different... Oh, it's a different man. Enjoyed that. Now it's time for the final round, sadly. Aww. Oh, all right, we'll do another couple of shows. The doors are locked. So, final round it is, and we're with you, Rachel. And your subject is, do you believe in soulmates?
Oh.
Yes. Real joy in accepting that challenge. Can you speak for a minute without hesitating, repeating or deviating on the subject? Do you believe in soulmates? My chakras are open for you, and your time starts now.
Do you believe in soulmates was the first question asked when I went on a date with a finance man who I had met, ironically, on Guardian Soulmates. It struck me quite soon on the date that he wasn't the liberal that I'd expected him to be, but rather a...
Paul.
Well, hesitation.
Yes, certainly. I did. Yeah.
Was a hesitation there. So that means you've got the subject. 40 seconds remaining on the clock. Do you believe in soulmates starting now?
As soon as I looked into Julian's eyes back in 1984, I realised we were destined to be soulmates. Look at the way he can't keep his eyes off me. Throughout the entire recording, he's been glancing over towards my direction and thinking to himself, how does he have such beautiful skin? And where? I wonder how he dyes his hair.
Julian.
Hesitation.
The slightest of slips. Oh, it was slight. It's hard because you two old warhorses have played the game a lot, and so you do hold each other to a very high standard. So, in which case, there was the tiniest of slip-ups. I'll give it to you, Julian. Do you believe in soulmates? I can't wait to hear. 22 seconds remaining. Time starts now.
I don't know if I do believe in soulmates.
Well, what a way to find out. Thank you very much. There's 35 years down the toilet. Thank you.
Since
you can make your own cocoa in future.
I enjoyed that, Paul. I'm giving you a point. It had nothing to do with the rules of just a minute.
No.
Julian, the subject remains with you. Do you believe in soulmates, starting now?
You meet someone, you look into their eyes, you think, oh, I feel a connection. 5 years later, you can't stand the sight of them. Well, I think if you were genuine soulmates, that feeling would last. I'm not talking about you, Paul. I've never for a moment forgotten the first time we met. I believe it was in...
Forgotten.
He's forgotten.
That's gone. That's gone.
Deviation. He said, I'll never forget, and then
yeah.
he forgot.
Yeah.
Isn't it?
Thank you. Patterson, it was your challenge.
Do you hesitate?
I think the hesitation was trying to recall, yeah. remembering.
Yes, yes. Yeah.
It's difficult to speak about.
I feel your emotions.
I'm filling up.
That's a correct challenge, Patterson. Yeah, there was a bit of hesitation there, a little bit misty-eyed, but mainly forgot all the details. So, with 1 second remaining... our final round of today's show. Do you believe in soulmates, starting now?
Yes, I believe in soulmates. Paul, will you be my soulmate?
Absolutely.
Well played. All right, let's have a look at those scores. Again, it's tightly bunched. So we've got Patterson in fourth place, Rachel in third, Julian in second, and tonight's winner, Mr. Paul Merton! And then, my darlings, we're going to have to leave you. But first of all, thanks to our extraordinary players of today's game, Julian Clary, Patterson Joseph, Paul Merton and Rachel Paris. We are indebted, of course, to Ian Messiter, who developed this nonsense, and Nicholas Parsons, who helmed it so magnificently. We also thank Katie Baum for blowing her whistle in my lug hole so delicately. The producer was Georgia Keating, and this was a BBC Studios audio production for Radio 4. And this is me, Sue Perkins, saying thanks so much for listening wherever you are. And please do join us next time we will play Just a Minute. Thank you.